The Recipes for Life podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com. Paul Thompson, also known as the Barefoot Podiatrist, has had 10 years' experience. He's also a dad to a 3-year-old and advocates for a barefoot lifestyle. He is passionate about teaching you to build a body that supports itself and to increase the longevity of your joints while reducing your need for orthotics. His own personal experience with years in orthotics, injuries and increasing pain through day-to-day activities has led him to successfully seek a better way of life. To find out more about Paul Thompson, visit thebarefootmovement.com.au. thebarefootmovement.com.au. Paul, thank you so much for being a part of the Recipes for Life podcast. How are you, brother?
Yeah, really well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
This is really an exciting podcast for me because it is something that is so important for every single person who has feet and a body attached to them. And you are known as the Barefoot Podiatrist. So let's just define for me and for our listeners what is a podiatrist, and why have you called yourself the Barefoot Podiatrist?
Yeah, okay. So podiatry is the assessment and treatment of the lower limb, in particular the feet. And traditionally, podiatry has two streams. There's general podiatry, which is skin care, nail care. But the other side of podiatry, which I'm more interested in, is human movement and walking patterns, which traditionally podiatrists would put people as a way of treatment in supportive shoes, orthotics, that type of thing. Where over the last 4 years, I'd say 5 years, I had a huge transition in how I treat, where now I kind of do the opposite to, I guess, most other podiatrists, in that I try and get people out of shoes and out of orthotics. And what I normally say to my clients is I try and activate their inner orthotic, which is using their muscles, their range of motion. So that's how I kind of became the Barefoot Podiatrist. And I guess the other thing too is I'm quite often barefoot myself. So I had a few friends kept calling me that, and it sort of stuck. So yeah, that's kind of how it all evolved.
Well, it seems really strange. Actually, not strange. It just feels like there's a real shift at the moment. When you're talking about experts in health and nutrition, that what you just, I guess, talked about is you're reversing pretty much, not even reversing, it's having a different point of view of something that was traditionally taught to you through the educational system. And we're seeing that more and more. So you're trying to get people to look at their feet and their bodies holistically. A lot of the doctors that I speak to are also trying to get themselves and other doctors and their patients to look at their bodies holistically. And this is covering, I guess, so many demographics as well as genres, as well as careers and industries at the moment, that there seems to be this return to, I don't want to use the word ancient wisdom, but being in touch with what it means to be human and what it means in relation to our connection to the earth. So, I mean, ultimately, let's start with talking about the feet and what is the purpose and what are the foundational principles that we need to take into account when we think about our feet? Because usually people just put one foot in front of the other and don't really think about it until something starts to cause them pain in their body. So let's talk about feet in specifics, please.
Yeah, okay. So you're right. Feet are often neglected. We throw them in a pair of shoes and, yeah, we get on with our day until we start to experience pain, and that's where we would then look for some kind of help. But feet are pretty amazing. They're, you know, there's 26 bones in the feet, around 33 joints, over 100 muscles, tendons, and ligaments, and over 200,000 nerve endings in the feet. So these little things on the end of our legs are jam-packed full of goodness that are designed to do great things. They absorb shock. They help us propel forward through walking and running. They have a spring-like effect when used properly that, again, helps with jumping, running, absorbing shock. But for many of us, we disconnect from our feet, both mentally and physically, and kind of forget how to use them or lose touch with how to use them. And again, we don't really tap into that until there's pain. And like I said, traditionally, we don't then reactivate any of that stuff. We would just prop it up with support and try and support whatever the underlying dysfunction is even further. So the principles of a good foot or good feet is they need to be strong. So I quite often see a lot of weakness and instability around feet, especially in clinic, people who are experiencing pain. And I'm probably a little bit biased in that most people I come into contact with, unfortunately, are experiencing pain. It would be fantastic to meet people and, you know, help them on a health journey more for a preventative purposes, but I guess it's human nature, right? We kind of don't generally take action until something's, you know, in the way, which is pain in most cases. The next thing I look at for a really, you know, a good healthy foot is length. And what I mean by length is mobility, flexibility, basically that you can take your foot, your ankle, your hips through full range of motion. Again, I quite often see people who are really jammed up in the hips, the ankles, even the big toe. The big toe is so important and activates a lot of cool little features within the foot that a lot of people don't realize, you know, even exist. And just to briefly elaborate on that, as you bend the big toe upwards, which happens during walking, it activates this process called the windlass mechanism, which tightens some of the ligaments in the arch, which helps lock the foot. So as we wind up that big toe, we lock the foot, which creates a nice rigid lever to propel off. But we're seeing more and more people that aren't activating the windlass mechanism or roll off around the side of the big toe, thanks to things like modern footwear. So we need to make sure there's good range of motion. Alignment and like centrating the joints is really important. Again, commonly I'll see people that are out of alignment, joints don't stack above each other, which increases wear and tear and eventually leads to pain and injury and reduced performance. And then the big one that sort of ties it all together is control. So we need to actually learn how to control the strength, the mobility, the alignment. And that's through normally how I would treat people is through different exercise drills that start to tap into human development patterns and learn to control motion. And for me, the big one that I really push with my clients is walking. The most functional movement we do daily is walking. And I'm just seeing more and more people. And, you know, I'm a bit weird in that when I'm walking down the street, you know, you're probably looking at what people are eating. I'm looking at what's on their feet and how they're walking. And I'm just, you know, I notice people don't walk well anymore, and that affects so many things. And as much as the foot plays a huge role in that, and the foot is really important to look after and to get out of shoes, we do need to look holistically and look at everywhere from, well, for me, I look from the core, where people are breathing, right down through the hips, right down to the foot, and make sure that that whole chain is working how it should and as naturally as it should. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. And I love the analogies there, and also the information. And I'm intrigued about prevention, because I see it in, I guess, the health circles, when we're talking about that 70 to 80% of chronic illness can be prevented through simple lifestyle changes, and really simple lifestyle changes. Unfortunately, the people that end up changing their diets are the ones that get to the point of either hitting rock bottom or becoming very sick or ill. So is your treatment the same for prevention as it is for somebody that comes in and is in pain?
Yes, to a certain degree, but no. So someone in pain, you're then having to treat the symptom as well. And quite often it takes longer in that you're having to work around whatever the pain is so that you don't flare that up more, you know, especially things like heel pain, really hard to start training someone's motor control in walking if they're compensating because of pain. So it turns into a bit of a longer process, I guess can be more expensive in that quite often they'll need more treatment around pain. And that's the same as, I guess, in any health industry. If you're being treated for pain, you're going to have to see someone more often to get the pain dealt with first. But the big mistake I see people in pain quite often make, who sometimes just aren't, I guess, aware of any other way, is that once the pain is resolved, that's your body's cue to really start changing how you move. Where a lot of people, the pain goes and it's like, perfect, I can move again, awesome, pain's gone, let's get on with life, until the next pain comes up. So I guess it's always prevention, the way I look at it. So I'll treat the pain, but then it's still trying to get that person to then prevent the next pain by working on how they move. And the prevention part, it isn't all that hard. It's, you know, working through and assessing where the dysfunction is, what is actually stopping you from moving well, and then working through that. And there's simple kind of drills that I take people through that they can do before they train, or just before they go for a walk, or if it's not an exercise type of person, they'll just do it for 5-10 minutes a day to start just changing the patterns of how their body moves. Because a lot of it is habit, and, you know, strength and mobility isn't all that hard to change generally, but it's the habits that need to be changed. And that's just doing. That's just, you know, every day being consciously aware of how you're moving and trying to implement drills to address, you know, the problems with how you're moving. But you need to be committed. And that's the thing. You need to want to change, which, you know, I find a lot of people do once they realize that there is a better way. And that, you know, the cost of, in my industry, it's fairly easy, in that the cost of orthotics really starts to add up over years. So, you know, to start changing the way you move and find that you can start functioning without orthotics becomes a lot cheaper. But you also start to regain a lot of power, in that you understand how your body's moving and how it should move. And it creates a different way of moving. You start moving with purpose rather than just from getting, you know, from A to B. You start to really appreciate what your movement can do for you and how it can actually improve your well-being, rather than, you know, decreasing the longevity of your joints. So yeah, to answer your question, prevention I guess is always key, but for someone in pain, we do need to treat those symptoms as well.
Well, there seems to be a common theme with the podcast that I've been doing on recipes for life over the last sort of 6 or 7 months. And I think you're number 30 of my interviews so far. And the common theme is replacing negative patterns or patterns that don't serve us, whether they're emotional, whether they're habitual eating patterns, whether they're habitual or negative thought patterns that we've inherited or adopted either from our parents or society or from any number of different places and the dialogue that we have with ourselves. And you're also, you're reiterating this and echoing this in a physical sense when it comes to how we move our bodies and how we can improve these patterns. And as you said, it doesn't take much. And I do want to get into the tips and some functional ideas and for people to be able to implement it through this podcast. But I want to simply address what being barefoot means and why it is so important at this particular time in human history. Because it was interesting, yesterday I shared a post on my social media where the New South Wales rugby team that played in the State of Origin, there was a story about them training barefoot. And it was sort of, it was interesting because 2 years prior, there were stories about me walking around barefoot and telling people that barefoot is pretty cool and it's a great thing to do to connect to the earth and great for our physical makeup, so to speak, and to let our feet actually move properly. And I was ridiculed as being crazy. So I want to hear from a podiatrist why barefoot, why you use this as one of your tools and something that you promote, especially for children.
Yeah, so look, for me, barefoot is the most natural way. If we can move well in a barefoot state, then you basically have good control of your body. There's nothing supporting you. There's no little heel lifts in your shoe that are, you know, changing those basic patterns. So, like, barefoot is the most natural state. It's how we're born. It's how we learn to grow and develop. It's how nature intended us to move. Nature didn't create us with the intention of putting us in shoes to get around. And look, you know, I get it that shoes are, you know, sometimes needed in this day and age for protection or even to do with fashion. You know, that plays a huge part. But there is something really powerful about getting barefoot and tapping into what our feet are designed to do. And like I said earlier, there's, you know, around 200,000 nerve endings, which is kind of on par with our hands and our lips. So, you know, these huge sensory organs on the end of our limbs are designed to give our body feedback. And one of the huge benefits I feel in getting barefoot and training barefoot is that you're letting your body or letting your feet talk to your body. So you're getting instant like feedback. If you're landing too hard, if you aren't activating your muscle properly, you start to feel it pretty quick because there's nothing to, you know, I guess, hide behind. There's no cushioning. There's no, you know what I mean? There's nothing that's going to change how you should be moving.
There's no filter.
There's no filter at all. So it's pretty raw. But there's also, I'm not an expert in earthing by any means and don't claim to be, but there's some great books and articles around the benefits of reducing inflammation with earthing as well. So, you know, there's like getting barefoot and moving. You know, I feel there's the earthing benefits to that. But in my practice and how I view things, it's more the physical. It's stripping everything back and learning to move how nature intended us to move and feeling different textures with our feet. So it's funny, you know, I'll quite often talk to patients around, you know, getting barefoot and showing them exercises to do in their bare feet. And, you know, many people will say like, oh, you know, I go barefoot around the house all the time. Like, okay, great. Do you do that like with purpose? Do you think about how you're moving? And normally the answer is no. And do you get onto different textures, you know, or is it just your floorboards or your carpet or whatever you have? And normally the answer is it's just that one surface. And I encourage people to get out and feel different surfaces. It's what our body needs for that feedback of how to start controlling, or how to start moving and absorbing shock or propelling differently based on the surface you're on. So you'll move very differently on sand as you would on concrete, you know, or on grass. But also the feeling of that, it really starts to give you a really good awareness of what's happening under your feet. And even just consciously walking on different surfaces, you can start to feel that, you know, you might be walking a little bit differently. So it's kind of nice, I guess, just as a bit of a meditation as well, to walk around and consciously feel what's happening under your feet and you know, be aware of what's going on around you. But from the physical point of view, those textures are really important for feedback to the brain. You know, our feet are the one thing generally, unless you're crawling around, but they're the one thing that are between us and the ground. So we need that feedback. We need to feel what's under us at any given time so our body can adjust, you know, our shock absorption or our propulsion accordingly. Otherwise, we're kind of just, yeah, we're relying on these shoes and supports that hopefully have us in a good position, but 99% of the time don't.
It's really interesting too, because I've been surfing now for 30 years, and it's something that I've taught my children ever since they're about 4 or 5. They started surfing, my two daughters, and one of the joys in those early days when we were learning is where we lived in North Bondi, we'd actually walk down along the rocks, and we sort of, I termed the phrase of us being the North Bondi rock hopping surf crew, you know, because we would walk barefoot on these really quite uneven surfaces, the rocks that that fringe North Bondi there. It was always fun, and you just have this wonderful connection to, or being present and in the moment, because you don't want to cut your foot, you don't want to stub your toe, you don't want to do any of this. So you have so much attention and in where you're placing your feet, whereas most times throughout life you're just walking. So I really enjoyed that process, and even jumping off the rocks into the ocean. And a lot of the times you cut your feet, it's just part of the thing, but it sort of toughens it up as well. And talking about children, it's interesting as well, because even this year or last year, I got my oldest daughter who started high school. They have to wear leather black shoes, and I got her some of those barefoot type shoes off the net, which she was a little bit reluctant about wearing because they looked a little bit different from what the other kids were wearing. But I said, why don't you give it a shot for a few months, and then if you don't like it, then you can go back to your other school shoes, which just looked a little bit clunky and didn't look that comfortable, and didn't give them that, from my research, is to get them as close to being barefoot as possible for their 6 hours a day at school. So can you talk to me about the progression, or where we are at this particular point in history with the different types of shoes that are out there? And because we have to wear them to some degree when we go to the airports and things like that. They're not going to let me on the plane probably going barefoot. And also, let's look at thongs, these type of things, and what's the better choices out there without talking about brands or anything like that?
Okay, look, I just want to, you just mentioned a couple of things I'd love to just jump back to. So around the rock hopping, that is amazing. So the amount of feedback you get from walking over rocks, and it's nature's way of mobilizing our feet, right? Having to contort your feet over rocks and grip rocks, that's how you keep feet really healthy. That's how our body is designed to move. We're designed to climb over things. And with the cutting of your feet, it's funny, like my little boy, he's quite often, well, he's barefoot 99% of the time. Even at preschool, we had a conversation with them. He's not the only one that goes barefoot to preschool, but the conversation was about cutting feet and, you know, OH&S. And I'd said to the preschool and to friends that kind of, you know, quite often have a go at me about the state of his feet, because quite often he does bang them up and, you know, there'll be little cuts and things. But my take on that is that little wounds like that, they heal. But putting him in shoes and trying to stop some little cuts, it's going to be a lot harder for me to fix the broken movement patterns than it is to, you know, for a week of a little wound or blister healing. So little cuts and things, don't be afraid of that. You know, it's like, I think we, without sounding, you know, too aggressive, we kind of need to toughen up a little bit as humans. We've become really soft and rely on things like shoes a little bit too much, that a lot of people can't even walk outside now without shoes because it feels like they're walking on eggshells, which is quite bizarre because our feet should be able to walk over things and should be able to take a few little knocks and bruises. So, you know, don't go and smash yourself up, but little cuts and things, especially on kids, you know, as long as you treat those wounds and keep them healthy and let them heal properly, they're a lot easier to fix than the big problems that I see later on in clinic.
If we're talking about feet, I spend a bit of time in Fiji every year and go surfing, and the best feet I've ever seen are on the Fijian people. That I remember, it must have been 20 years ago when I had my first trip there, and I looked at this fella's feet that he was just walking on the coral reef. Like there was no issue, where I was gingerly trying to just put a toe here or there. And I just watched how he walked with just such authority and such power in his steps. And I looked at his feet, and they were just huge. You know, I can't even imagine how many cuts and things, but it didn't even look like he would get cut from the reef anymore. It was just that thick and that strong. And I was just amazed back then, just going, wow, look at our feet compared to this culture's feet that work outdoors and have this life. And, you know, beautiful bone structure, beautiful height, the whole thing. And I was just in awe of it. I was like, yeah, I want to get my feet like that. And, I do have to admit, I do wear booties when I go surfing over reef because I don't want to spoil a surfing holiday, but I'm barefoot most of the time. But I just wanted to put that out there because, again, they're living in nature, they're living in harmony with nature, and they're not scared of that process. And it seems to me that it's working in their favor.
It's funny you say that because I had a podiatrist working for me around 4 years ago when I kind of really was ramping up the barefoot movement, and she was from one of the islands. I can't remember. I think it was Samoa, perhaps. But when we got chatting, and she was like, "Oh, you know, you'd love my grandmother's feet. Her grandmother was in her 90s at the time, and you know, she said they're so weird looking." And she had taken a photo from a trip when she'd been over there. I said, "What's wrong with them?" She was like, "Well, look at them. Look how wide the toes are and, you know, like how beat up they look and all this." And I said, "So she's in her 90s, you know, like, okay, her feet are really wide, her toes are wide. Yes, they look flat, but to me they look really strong. How does she move?" And she said, "Oh, well, you know, she still sleeps on the ground. She can still squat, like a full, you know, deep squat. They eat on the floor and they get up and down off the floor." And I said, "How many of our patients, you know, in clinic who are in their 90s, do you think could get up and down off the ground like that?" And she was like, "None." I said, "And feet, you know, do you think they should be nice and wide like that? If she's never worn shoes and that's how they look, does that kind of look natural? Or do you think, you know, we should be binding up her toes and trying to pull them into a nice curve like all us Westerners?" And she just kind of stopped and jaw dropped open and was like, okay. I get it now." I was just like, like what we perceive as normal isn't natural. Now we've created these shoes that change the structure of bones and make them look a certain way, which is kind of no better than what the Chinese did with foot binding. And everyone gave them a hard time for a long time about binding feet, but we're kind of still doing the same thing to a certain extent and changing bone structure and making them look a certain way that isn't functional. So those really wide feet that you're talking about, they're beautiful. That's how it should be. And that should be our normal. That's what I'd love to see. And I'd love to see myself out of a job. If everyone had feet like that, I could go and find myself another job. Job done. You know, I'd be so happy.
Awesome. So let's talk about shoes then, because obviously we do live in this world. Children need to wear them to school. A lot of people need to wear them to work, even though I tend to walk around a lot of the time without them at work as well. And don't tell anyone at MKR, but usually I'm sitting there in my suit with no shoes on. But that's our little secret. Let's talk about shoes and the do's and the don'ts and high heels and thongs and the new barefoot type of shoes that are out there.
Yeah, so look, in around the 1970s, there was a big running boom and Nike kind of led the way. And, you know, shoes have been a part of history for a long time and heels have had a certain status back in, you know, with the kings and queens. But, yeah, more recently, with what we see now in shoes is around that 1970s when Nike decided to try and reduce the pressure and stress on the Achilles tendon and see if they could reduce any type of stress fractures by changing the way people ran. And they invented or, you know, sort of came up with what we now see, which is the modern jogger that has a raised heel and a bit more support. Prior to that, people would have been in, more like your Converse Chuck Taylors or Asics Tigers. That's kind of what people were running in prior to that. Dress shoes probably still had a heel. I think that's been around for a long time. But what we see, or what I'm seeing, especially now, is majority of shoes that we perceive as being good support and healthy for our feet, and it's what we're marketed to from footwear industries, even the podiatry industry to a certain extent, we're encouraged to get people into supportive footwear, which generally will have a stiffer sole, a raised heel. Like a modern jogger will have anywhere from 12 to 14 millimeters of heel raise built in. And not many people realize that, but they know the sole looks chunky and it looks cushioned. But what a lot of people don't realize, there is a heel raise. So there's a little high heel built into our modern joggers. And that feature alone changes everything. It shortens the Achilles tendon and shortens the calf. So when you try and get back to, a barefoot state or even into a smaller shoe, like, or a lower shoe, like thongs or, a football boot or something that's flatter, it's no wonder you start to see problems if you've been walking around with your heel raised at 12 to 14 mils day in, day out at school or at work or, in your joggers, and then you try and get into a flatter shoe, of course you're going to end up with, Achilles pain or calf pain. That little heel in the shoe also tilts our center of gravity forward. So if you can imagine standing up straight with a metal rod straight through your back and put, a centimeter heel under your heel, you can imagine the forward lean that you would start to get if you stayed perfectly straight. But we don't stay perfectly straight because that would look weird walking around with a forward tilt. So we compensate by tilting our hips forward, obviously shortening the calf and the Achilles, and arching our back more. So in a really high heel, that's where you'll start to see, women or men, where the calves start to look really quite, muscular because they're quite shortened. The butt and the hips will kind of stick out more. The back will arch, which then pushes the chest out, which isn't a normal way of standing. But yet we're walking around in this day in, day out in most modern shoes. Most modern shoes also have a layer of cushioning. It's a fantastic selling feature for shoe companies. Every year they come out with their newest and latest type of cushioning or air pocket or whatever it is that, is on the market that year. Hmm. But there was a study done by a guy who showed that there was the more cushioning that was in shoes, it actually increased the ground reaction force. So the amount of impact going through our body is more when we have cushioning in the shoes versus being able to absorb it naturally through our body without cushioning.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And part of the reasoning they think is that there's increased contact time on the ground. So with cushioning, you're more likely to stay with your foot on the ground longer, whereas being barefoot, when you're running or walking, you'll tend to shift the weight a lot quicker and get your foot off the ground. It's a bit more springy. Whereas when we dampen those nerve endings with cushioning, we're more likely to stay on the ground longer. And it also increases instability. So cushioning can feel amazing. And we're seeing a lot of this memory foam around at the moment. But what I then see clinically is conditions relating to instability. You know, even though it might feel nice with this cushioning underneath, what people don't feel is how much harder their body's having to work to stabilize them on that pillow. So if you stand on like an uneven surface, you know that the sides of your legs and your hips, they do kick into gear and you'll feel yourself having to work harder to balance. Whereas in a shoe, it's lessened because it's not a huge unstable surface, but it's unstable enough for our body to kick into overdrive and start overusing muscles to keep us upright, which then leads to issues, pain, injury, reduced performance.
So what should we be wearing? Should we be going for those barefoot style shoes as I'm wearing these days? What's the best way to navigate moving forward for people?
Yeah, look, I think we should be aiming to get into barefoot shoes and avoiding all those features like raised heels, stiff soles, you know, excess cushioning. But we need to approach it with caution. If we're used to traditional footwear and the raised heels and the cushioning, we need to adjust slowly and transition. Just jumping from one to the other won't be all that beneficial. And I can tell you that from experience. Years ago, I tried to do that and thought, you know, this barefoot approach is it. This is going to change my life. And when I jumped from normal shoes to barefoot shoes, yes, my feet were getting stronger and I, you know, was more conscious about how I was moving, but it didn't, haven't been put in normal shoes yet. I think it's really important that we keep kids in as barefoot a shoe as possible, especially at school.
So children into the barefoot as often as we can, and then into the barefoot shoes to prevent things. Older people obviously will need to do the exercises and transition back into a space of strengthening their feet. So let's talk about some of these tips or practices that you can recommend for people to do basically today to, I guess, reverse what damage may have been caused through improper use of wearing shoes and also improper use of how to walk and how to run and how to train with their feet. So what can people do today to start that process?
Yeah, so look, I encourage people to, well, first and foremost, get your shoes off. And ideally, if you can, get outside and start to feel some different surfaces. Don't go too hard too soon, but it is really important to just get a feeling of what it feels like to go barefoot again and tap into some of those nerves. But some exercises you could start with that I find really help to, again, just create a bit of strength and awareness around the foot are a couple of simple ones. And these are simple. They're not designed to necessarily change the way you walk. There's a process to that. And, you know, so don't think that this is going to change everything for you, but it's definitely a starting point. So feet flat on the ground, and a nice exercise can be to try and lift your big toe up in the air while the other toes stay down and vice versa. So then pushing the big toe down and lifting the little toes up, it starts to just help activate some of the intrinsic muscles in the foot, but as well as start to just reconnect your brain to your foot. So a lot of people can really struggle to move their toes individually on cue because they've been jammed in a shoe and haven't really had to move for a long period of time. So that little toe yoga exercise is a nice one to get started.
There's I'm doing it
also
now.
One, you're doing that and you like that one? There's one that I really like that's called short foot. And that one is basically keeping your toes flat on the ground, your foot's flat on the ground, barefoot, keeping the ball of the foot on the ground as well, heel on the ground, and try and think of four points under the foot. So under your big toe joint, little toe joint, inside and outside of the heel, we're trying to keep even pressure under those points. Now I want you to try and lift your arch up. So you're kind of squeezing the muscle in the arch and kind of cupping the foot, but keeping the ball of the foot on the ground to, again, start to activate some of those intrinsic muscles. This one starts to activate what's called the abductor hallucis muscle, which helps keep the big toe straighter. But this muscle is also one of the big arch-supporting muscles. So tapping back into this one can help you start to recreate a bit more of an arch, and which will in turn help you move more functionally and absorb and propel off a bare foot a bit easier. So that's another one I love, and I've put them on a few times on my Instagram. So if you want a visual of that, I can give you the link to that, Pete, if you like, and people can see what that actually looks like if the audio isn't making as much sense. And they'd be the two main ones I'd really start with. You know, obviously foam rolling and stretching and just keeping your body moving well is really important. And the big one that I'd encourage is start playing with movement. Think of movement like a child. You know, children come into this world and we don't necessarily teach them how to move. They, you know, start breathing on their own. They will then eventually crawl on their own right up until they walk. And we don't really teach that. It's all innate in us. So we know how to do this. But a great way of getting back to being able to function well and walk well is moving like a child again. So, you know, get up and down off the ground. Do some crawling exercises. Laying on your back and learning to breathe with your diaphragm again are all really important things to moving naturally and creating stability through movement that in turn will help your barefoot journey, because the more stability you can create through the body, the more control you'll have over your body. And when you don't have control, that's when things will be out of alignment, muscles will become imbalanced, joints will stiffen up. So stability is the real key. And what I find is getting back to those development patterns that babies go through is a really important tip or trick to doing that. So get on the ground and crawl around with stability. Don't let your hips wobble around. Put a phone book or something on your back and just practice crawling and really propelling through those hips, pushing out through the big toe, just learning what it feels like to move with stability through your hips and propelling off through your big toe while you're crawling. Is a really nice, simple exercise that will benefit that barefoot journey as well. And the last one that I want to throw out there, and this will be great for you too, Pete, is before you do any type of sport or activity, show your body what that surface feels like. So for surfing, that might be doing that short foot exercise on your surfboard. So lay your board down, let your foot feel what the wax feels like, what it feels like to activate your foot. So, you know, you might don't put your whole weight on your surfboard on the ground, but one foot at a time, just activating your foot on that wax or in your booty or, you know, on the grass before you play football, whatever before you go for a run, even on the surface you're going to run on. Starting to just feel what that feels like so that your body is tapped into what it needs to do. So it becomes less of a reaction to the surface and a bit more proactive. Your body will start to know what it needs to do on that surface and how it needs to, or how much effort you need to create stability through your foot on that given surface. So yeah, my last tip would be activate your foot on the surface you're about to, you know, perform your sport or exercise on.
Mate, I love it. I've really enjoyed this podcast. I think there's a lot of information for people to start implementing it. And also for those, I guess for the understanding that really we have to look at ourselves as animals and holistically from the ground up and from the top down as well, and really start to think about how to use our bodies so that we can become
like the your friend's Fijian grandmother or lady in her 90s that can squat and move and move around in that agile state, and also with that strength and agility and power and confidence. I've loved this, mate. So thank you, and we love you, and I will let everybody know where to find you as well so they can keep up with any new information that you share. So thank you, Paul. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to having surf with you one day.
Thanks, mate.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.